Sokala Duma Radio.
Hello and welcome to Sokala Duma Radio. My name is Nkululeko Nkewu, and in this week's big interview, I speak to a man that has scored 18 goals for Bafana Bafana. He scored a hat-trick in an FA Cup. He's a former Joma Cosmos and Sundowns player. His name is Phil Masinga.
Sokala Duma Radio.
I'm now joined by former South African legend. He's a former South African striker. He used to play for Leeds United. He played in Italy. He played in Switzerland as well. He scored what was one of the most important goals, if not the most important goal for Bafana Bafana. His name is Philemon. His surname is Masinga. His nickname is Chipa. Chipa, thank you very much for your time. How are you, sir?
Thank you, sir. I'm happy for having me in your show.
And we're very happy to speak to you as well. Would you say that you've scored the most important goal in the history of Bafana Bafana, or is it one of the most important goals?
I think personally it's one of the most important goals for South Africa and the team itself as well. They've just been there. They're all very important in making sure that we all qualify for the World Cup.
Yeah, and you're not shy in scoring goals. I mean, we'll talk a little bit about your career, where you've played and what you've been able to achieve as well. You have a profile that is very, very difficult to compress into one conversation, and one needs to do justice to that. But we'll get there. I know that you were born in Klerksdorp, and your cousin is Bennett Masinga. I wanted to find out from you quickly, and to the listeners as well, what kind of role did, and may his soul rest in peace, what kind of role did Bennett have in your upbringing, and did you guys grow up close together? Just describe to us the scenario of you and your cousin and when you were growing up.
Bennett was an inspirational to me to be a soccer player. I used to carry his boots while I was still young, and you know, things he could do with the ball were just unbelievable, and you know, that inspired me to want to be a professional player as well in the future. And then when that opportunity came, I made the best out of it.
But for me, this is not a chance. It's not something that just happens. No family. You hardly get families where Bennett was in the history of Sundowns. He has scored the most goals by a player in a season, 33 goals in 1990. And you, of course, have a hat-trick in the FA Cup. You've scored the most important goal in South African football, in my opinion. So this is not by chance. Was there any member in the family that was a football player, maybe in the amateur ranks, that you know of? Because it can't be that a cousin and a cousin dominate South African football in the way that you guys did.
Yeah, there was a background of the Masinga family. It was a sporting family. My father was a soccer player. The younger brother to my father was also a soccer player. Then we played different sporting codes. I played tennis. My father was a tennis player as well. Then we were born in a sporting family, and we grew up participating in most of different sporting codes.
And when you look at the current generation of the Masingas now, would you say that you or Bennett or any of the family members have been able to pass those genes? Can we be able to see any of the Masingas, before we move on to other questions, we'll be able to see in the near future any Masingas in dominating South African sports like you guys did?
Definitely there are some promises from my firstborn that he might be joining one of the teams soon.
Nice, awesome. How old is he at the moment?
He's about 24 years old.
Wow, and he's about to join a professional team, potentially.
No, a national preservation team. He was studying in UNIBO, playing for University of North West team. He was doing pretty well. Hopefully he will do well in future. And then my last born as well, they call him Little Name. I don't know why they call him Little Name. Probably there's something good about him. I just have to go and check on him. Most of the time when I have to go and watch him, you find myself being busy doing something.
And of course, does he share the same height as you? I mean, you were a towering striker, intimidating to two defenders. Do any of these kids of yours have the same stature as the great Phil Masinga?
Yes, they've got the same stature, but the young one, you know, you can't tell now, but the older one, you can tell, you can see him that it's an identical of Phil.
And of course, Phil Masinga played for Mchumane, at some point, and that's where you grit your teeth, and that's where we, as the South African football fraternity, got to know you. As young as I was back then, I know that you wrote your name in South African history books by scoring a goal of the season for Jomo Cosmos against Kaizer Chiefs in those years. But let's look back as to how did this Jomo Sono man, this enigma in South African football that has brought us a lot of talents, how did he support you? How did that move come about?
You know, Jomo, when I joined Cosmos, it was about being next to Jomo. I just loved watching Jomo playing when I was still young. And, you know, joining his team was just grateful for most of my teammates that I played with them then. And most of them, they were still at school. We had about 8 to 9 players playing for Cosmos who were still attending school. And I would say Jomo was more of a college of soccer, because most of those players graduated and then they've managed to go places.
And I mean, when he would have scouted you from school, and you play your first season at Jomo Cosmos, was it very difficult to break through in the first team?
It was not easy. I remember when I put the pen on the contract with Cosmos, the first thing that he told me that I must really be happy to be signing to play for the team. I must start working more harder to be in a starting level. Then it took me 3 to 4 months to break through, and I was only 18 years then.
And of course, you made your mark in the team by being a top scorer, and then there was a move to Mamelodi Sundowns. I mean, there's a lot of things that we can say about your time in Jomo, but like I said, there's not enough that we can do in the short amount of time that we have to do justice to your career. Let's quickly glance to your time at Mamelodi Sundowns and whether or not that was your dream move. Talk us through what happened, what led to that move, and your time at Sundowns.
Yeah, for me it was a dream move, because I always wanted to play with Bennett in a professional level.
Yeah.
And that move it came because of Bennett. There was some interest from Chiefs and Pirates, but I decided to choose Sundowns because I wanted to play with Bennett. And then Sundowns was having top class players as well. They had the cream of South African football, playing with the likes of Jesukiel Nokodi, NS Mutawale. You know, that team, it is still scaring me when I have to mention some of the players who were playing in that team.
And then you enter into the fray at Mamelodi Sundowns in a star-studded team, and you become an important player as well. Take us through how long it took you to be able to break into the team and the good times that you had in Mamelodi Sundowns.
I think what helped me mostly it was that I was really humble and prepared to learn. I was not big-headed. I was coming from Cosmos. Everybody was singing good praises about me, but it didn't go to my head. And I just kept on working very hard. And then with the support of people like Martin Gombela, Enes Mutawale, the list is endless of people who were hit when they saw me joining Sundowns. And then they were prepared to help me. And most of them, they kept on saying, "We don't see you playing for Sundowns for a long time, because with the way you play, anytime you can go overseas."
And you had a very high goals to game ratio. You scored a goal every other game, and there were times where you would score braces and hat tricks at Mamelodi Sundowns. What would you attribute that to? Would you attribute that to the fact that you were in a star-studded team, or so your own ability contributed to that as well?
I think it was a good team. We knew how to complement each other, and then we understood each other very well. Then it was easier for me and Mambos to get more goals, because we knew where we were supposed to be. And where we were supposed to be, it was be in the 18 area. That's where you can score goals.
Mm. And now let's talk about, and inevitably, I mean, if you perform for a team like Mamelodi Sundowns, then it's inevitable that one, overseas will come calling, and two, Bafana Bafana will come calling. Let's take us through. You scored 18 goals for Bafana Bafana. You're one of the highest goal scorers for Bafana Bafana, which is something that is a prestige next to your name. But that there was a process to that. There were difficult times. There were times where you refused to play because of how you were received. Let's revisit that period a little bit. Talk to me about your participation in the 1996 African Cup of Nations and your role. What was supposed to be your role there? Did you understand that you were going to be a bit part player? Were you going to be the main striker? Was Mark Williams going to be the main striker? Let's talk about that tournament a little bit.
I think when I came back for AFCON in 1996, I knew that I was the main striker. And then they had the likes of Mark Williams, Sean Bartlett, and Daniel Mutau to exchange around me, because most of the games that we played there, I was always playing with. I played with Mark Williams at the beginning, and then Sean came in when I got suspended for the semifinals because I had two yellow cards. And in the finals, I played with Sean because Sean did well against Ghana in the semifinals. But all in all, it was very exciting to be just part of the national team. I mean, when we started in 1992, things were not as easy as they were in 96. But it only took us four years to show the whole continent that is capable of doing.
And of course, in 1997, in the World Cup qualifiers, you scored the goal that led to Bafana Bafana qualifying for their first World Cup, and you participated in that World Cup. But I'm interested in a story that was shared by one of your teammates, I won't mention who, that at some point you found it very difficult to play for the national team because of the fact that when you were not scoring as much goals as you were supposed to be, perceived by the fans, of course, that at some point they would boo you. How did that affect you personally and your family as well?
I think it was a difficult moment, and then, you know, those kind of things, they make you be strong and grow to be a bigger player. And, you know, it hurts, because even when you're playing outside the country, like I was playing in England and in Italy, supporters won't be nice to you if you're not performing, and, you know, they'll be hard on you. But, you know, that taught me how to accommodate that thing and then work more harder than trying to probably think too much about it. But it was a journey that it was not nice, but at the same time, it made me a better person.
And of course, you went overseas, you played for Leeds, you were part of the deal between you and Lucas Radebe. You guys went to Leeds United, and you played there for around 2 years, and you didn't score as much as you scored in South Africa. You went to St. Gallen, you didn't play too much games, you played around 10 games, and then you went to Italy, where you would score combined over 25 goals. Let's talk about your time briefly in overseas and whether or not you consider that as a success for you. Do you think that you were a successful export for South African football?
Yes, I think it was a success for me. I mean, going to England without tiling, get signed immediately. It never happened for a player who's coming from a semi-professional league. Mm-hmm. South Africa, again, it was a semi-professional league. Then you go to England and get signed immediately. That shows that what you're capable of doing. And then I had a good start, but along the way things didn't go so well for me. Then I moved to Switzerland. Switzerland, I played 10 games there. Then after those 10 games, I moved to Italy, where I think I've enjoyed my stay in Italy. But at the same time, I had lots of injuries along the way. But I think I enjoyed it more in Italy because that's where I've made a big mark.
And of course, around the I'm not sure if you can remember this. In January 1995, something amazing happened in the FA Cup on the 17th. Do you remember the opponent, and do you remember how you felt after that game and what happened in that game?
The play against Walsall. Leeds United was playing against Walsall, and we were in extra time. And the score was 2-2. The coach introduced me into the game, and within 9 minutes, I scored 3 goals. It was so amazing. I didn't believe it, you know.
Wow.
Lucas came running to me, not believing what was happening, but I said, wow.
Well, that must have been the fastest hat-trick then, and I love the context that you're bringing here, because some of these games were not live to us, and we only have to read transcripts of what happened. Now that you provide context, that must have been the fastest hat-trick, or one of the fastest hat-tricks in the history of the FA Cup, one of the fastest hat-tricks scored by a South African, one of the fastest hat-tricks scored by the South African overseas. I mean, that was incredible. What happened on that night? Did you sleep? Oh, you partied throughout the night? What happened?
No. I went back home, and I had my man of the match champagne because I've scored 3 goals. Mm. Even if I've stayed only for 15 minutes, I was a man of the match for scoring 3 goals. I had to pop my champagne there and celebrate, and then I had a ball. Because when you score a hat-trick, you can go with the ball.
Yeah,
after
you
game.
Keep the ball.
Yeah.
Do you still have that ball, though?
Yes, it's still at home.
Okay, you should auction that ball. You'll make a lot of money. I mean, that's one of the fastest hat-tricks. We'll look into the fastest hat-trick of the FA Cup. You wouldn't be far away from that. You will make millions from that ball. Now, let's look at Italy. Italy is known as a country with a racist history. I mean, even as recent as 2017, there's been events documented that players are racially abused, with other players like Mario Balotelli choosing in one of the preseason friendlies 2 years ago to kick the ball out and then walk out, and Kevin Prince Boateng as well, when they were playing for AC Milan. Let's talk about the difficulties that you faced playing overseas, particularly in Italy.
It was not easy actually playing, not in Italy only. In many places around Europe, but you know, everything is against you, and then you'll have that racial issue as well. But you know, probably it's how you get trained. Probably I was trained not to worry about what is happening out there. I must think about what is happening in a pitch, because I had a lot of support from my teammates, and they were behind me. And whenever there was something that is racial, they'll always protect me and make sure that it doesn't affect me.
Mm-hmm. Would you say to players playing at the moment, and I'm sure it's very difficult to advise a worker what to do in their workplace, but as a person of experience who's walked in their shoes, would you say that walking out of the game is a good idea, sends a strong message that you're not going to tolerate it?
It depends. It depends how it comes. I mean, people are not the same. Our emotions are not the same. I can't blame somebody to do that because he couldn't take it anymore. But you will always have to try to say we can even do it much better than probably the way some have done it. You can't work against 5% of people in that country, and then you make them as if all of them are like that.
Now let's look, Big Phil, to the current, to the present. the PSL football, before we wrap up our conversation, there is seemingly a shift in power. You know the big three. I don't even have to mention it to you. If I say big three, you know PSL. You know the Chiefs, Pirates, and Sundowns. There is seemingly a shift, though, because we know for a fact that Bidvest won the MTN 8 in the league, Cape Town City won the Telkom Knockout, SuperSport United won the NedBank Cup, so that means all the trophies were taken by teams outside the big three. What do you make of the shift? Do you think that there is a shift, that Chiefs are no longer part of that big tree? Maybe Bidvest is. Pirates maybe is no longer part of that big tree. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, there is a big shift. You've got a team like Bidvest first. There's Tom Joffe there. He's a billionaire. He can manage to buy any player that he wants and make them happy. Then players don't have to think of, I want to play for Kansas City because it's a big team or Pirates. It's a big team. I mean, you've got SuperSport. They are well off. They can manage to pay players good money. And that, it gives a challenge as well to teams like Pirates. And Chiefs, I mean, it's a little bit difficult for them to acquire players who are expensive that Jets can acquire.
So you would say, in your opinion, that there is a shift. Do you think that the shift, though, would be sufficient for us to no longer consider these teams part of the traditional big three, Pirates and Chiefs, because Sundowns at least are African champions?
I think the two teams, they will just have to up their game as well. I mean, if you are Real Madrid and Barcelona, you know, each and every year, each and every season, you need to produce. And then you need to know when you are a player, when you wear that shirt of Pirates or Real Madrid or Barcelona, what it means, that shirt. And then you need to win something. And that's a mentality that needs to be instilled on Kansas City and Pirates players. And not taking anything away from them. Some of them are really great players. But they should go back to the history of those teams and look at what those teams used to do during their heydays.
And now, towards the twilight of your career, towards the end of the career rather, as you stopped playing, a man by the name of Stuart Baxter around 2004 came to South African shores. He didn't do much. He was subsequently fired for failing to qualify for the 2006 FIFA World Cup. He started really well. Now he's been brought back for his second stint with Bafana Bafana. He's defeated Nigeria in his first AFCON qualifier. What would you say to South African football fans in looking at Stuart Baxter's Bafana Bafana and them thinking that this may be time, this is about time now that we win something? Do you look at the team and say, maybe your generation will not be the only generation that has won something for this country? Is it promising when you look at the team?
I'm hoping that we see our national team doing well. And I'm happy with Stuart Baxter. You know, for the first time when he came here in South Africa, he didn't know anything about South African football. And then what helped him is to come to Kaizer Chiefs, and then he has managed to study most of the players who are playing in the PSL, and he knows exactly now what he wants to achieve, what he wanted to achieve in 2004.
Now, your former team, Mamelodi Sundowns, achieved the greatest thing there is to achieve in club football, especially in the continent, which is to win the African Champions League. Your former club, Jomo Cosmos, is no longer in the PSL. What do you make of the fortunes of your two former clubs before we let you go?
I'll start with Cosmos first. I think that Rajay, things have been not going so well for him, and then I hope things turn around and he comes back to the Premier League. Premier League is not nice, and stressful without Thomas Sona being around. We'd like to see his legacy keep on staying, even if he's no more there, but the team must be there, just like Kaizer Chiefs. Kaizer is a legend on his own right. And then with Sundowns, they've done so well. And then thumbs up to Puso Msimane. He has done a stunning job. And his technical team, he's got a very strong technical team there. And not only technical team, players are so amazing. Great players. Those players, they can play anywhere in the world.
That's very nice to, and I'm sure they would love to hear such words. They would be delighted to hear such words from a Mamelodi Sundowns legend. And Big Phil, we thank you very much for your time. You've been a legend in South African football. There's still a lot that we can learn from you in the South African football fraternity. Your story needs to be written properly. It needs to be shared to current generations about the fact that we are able to produce exports that can be able to score hat-tricks in England, score goals in Italy, for example. We're not a weak country when it comes to football. Something is missing, but we can learn from your careers as to and find out what is missing. Big Phil, we thank you very much for your time, sir.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much for listening. I hope you enjoyed the interview and I hope you learned from the legend. I certainly did. Tune in next week for the next edition of the Big Interview on Sokala Duma Radio.
Sokala Duma Radio.
Sokala Duma Radio.